Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, hardly anybody in the mainstream media was talking about the March for Life, which I was at on Friday. That didn't make the news, but the Covington Catholic Boys versus the American Indians, that definitely made the news. And we thought it was one thing, and then you found out later, and I found out later, that it wasn't what you originally thought. And so once again, we're all a bunch of suckers, and there's media manipulation and confirmation bias on our side, on my side, on your side, on the right, on the left. And it looks horrible, doesn't it? All this hatred and back and forth and vitriol and terrible things being said, and what you saw there, what you thought you were watching with this group of Catholic boys that were in town from Kentucky for the March for Life, and then the American Indian protesters and the guy there who is an activist. And based on where you sit on that continuum politically, you read that information and ran with it based on where you already were. And so there was all that vitriol and all that hatred. But do you think America's that bad? Do you think we're that divided? I mean, I'm not exactly flying under the radar myself, but I rarely have any kind of nasty altercations or interactions like that. You know, some people will say stupid stuff on Facebook and everybody's got keyboard courage. But when it comes right down to it, I mean, your average life, 7 days a week, in church, out of church, not going to church, at the workplace, at school, in the stores, in conversations with your neighbors, whatever. Is it that bad where you're at? Because I almost never encounter this kind of stuff personally. And like I said, it's not like I'm some wallflower somewhere not speaking up. I'm not exactly under the radar. So I think we have to be careful, especially if you're a follower of Christ like I am. We need to be careful. We haven't been given a spirit of fear, but of love, power, and a sound mind. One of the fruits of the spirits is self-control. And we need to have that. And we need to be able to stand somewhat aloof, somewhat outside of the media maelstrom and there's the crazy manipulation going on, and not fall prey to that, because we're supposed to take every thought captive that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, right? And we tear down and demolish strongholds, and we don't fight with carnal weapons. Our weapons are spiritual, and hopefully you know all that, and that all sounds familiar to you. But this whole thing with the Catholic guys and what was going on there and the American Indian thing, I was doing radio when all that happened. I was at the Museum of the Bible, and that was the first time, believe it or not, and you're probably disappointed in me, which I would understand. I should have gotten up there before this year. That was the first time I've ever been to a March for Life. I didn't like the rally part. I thought that was, you know, my good buddy Troy Newman, who's the president of Operation Rescue and one of my pro-life heroes. You know, it's like, you know, he's a little uncomfortable with the March for Life because there's a lot of parties and, you know, call them parties, events, black tie things, a lot of things like that. And while we're still killing about 1 million children a year in America, 41 million around the globe. And Troy's been in the movement for over like 25, 30 years. And he's just all the smiling and having fun and the band playing and all that kind of stuff. It just kind of rubs him wrong. And I completely understand that. I got a little sense of that while I was up there. The rally was okay. Ben Shapiro was, you know, who's brilliant, you know, had a couple of good lines. But overall, the rally didn't do much for me. And I was like, okay, whatever. But the march was great. I really liked the march. The march was spiritually was a feast. Emotionally, it was a feast. Visually, it was a feast. With over 100,000 people, some estimates as high as 200,000. It was really remarkable to see that. And the high percentage of young people that were there. I would bet 30, 40% of the crowd, the entire crowd, was under the age of 30. And that was really encouraging. I really enjoyed that. But, of course, that got no news, almost no news. But what did get news was the whole Catholic teen responding to the American Indian, and the way they painted that out was a bunch of white supremacist jerk, spoiled, crazy Christian rich kids abusing the nice old American Indian man. And it was the American Indian guy that kind of led the charge in there, and some I would call them crazy, I think. I don't know what to call them. I've been around some of those guys before and have listened to some of those guys before. They're African Americans. They're big on the Old Testament, big on Israel. They're kind of out there. And they were saying all kinds of nasty stuff. And then the American Indian protesters, demonstrators, whatever, walked over there and got in the face of all these kids. So that was the news that came out afterwards. And actually, the young man, the one that you've seen his picture, he had the red MAGA hat on, Make America Great Again, the Trump hat. He wrote a full statement, which I shared on Facebook earlier today. I'm not going to read all that, but it was really well written. It was totally believable. He explained the whole situation. I think that he handled it really quite well for being a young high school guy in the face of all that with everybody's phone recording you. I thought he handled it very well. Was he smirking a little? I don't know. Maybe. I think a lot of that was just discomfort. And when you've got 400 video cameras going at you on everybody's iPhone, that's not going to be exactly a comfortable situation. So I think you should definitely go read what he said. I was really impressed by it. I like I said, I shared it on Facebook. So I think you should go read what it said. And then I picked up on an article from Dr. Michael Brown, who's on a lot of stations that I'm on before I'm on. Dr. Michael Brown, brilliant guy, great writer, great communicator, Messianic Jew. And he wrote this was an interesting title. In North Korea, America, and the media, how different are we? When it comes to having access to information, North Korea and America are worlds apart. One nation is totally closed, with the populace only getting what the media feeds them, and the people have no internet access. The other nation is wide open, with the populace having access to an endless stream of media options and with virtually universal internet access. Yet, in another very real way, the two countries are similar. The populations in both countries are heavily manipulated by the media, which is absolutely true. And so we run with it. Now, in the case of North Korea, of course, all the manipulation is done by a communistic, atheistic, psychotic regime, right? In the American context, it's competition that's really driving it. And sex sells, blood sells, controversy sells, vitriol sells in the American context in the 21st century. And so they're out there just jumping on stuff, and they're all so competitive, they got to get the most salacious story out there as quickly as possible and checking facts. Well, maybe we'll do that later. And so this is part of Dr. Brown's article. Over the weekend, both the left and the right were in uproar over the allegedly horrible behavior of some pro-life Catholic school students. Not only were they wearing MAGA hats, a serious sin in and of itself, of course, but they allegedly harassed an elderly Native American drummer. What's more, they also yelled, "Build the wall." The personal information for a lot of these students has been released. This one kid who wrote his story and wrote his version of it, which was, I thought he did a great job, was talking about death threats. They're receiving death threats. He and his family, other people, death threats. That's how bad it is in America. So a couple more thoughts on that and media manipulation and how we're part of the problem. And then we'll turn to a letter from a Birmingham jail.
What will make a man so bold? Make a woman lay her own life down.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you today, and we're going to turn the corner here in a minute, and I'm going to read a decent amount from the letter from a Birmingham jail by, of course, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and this is MLK Day, national holiday, as it should be. And there's so many things in this letter. It's so powerful. I mean, there's so few people that communicate like this, and this is when he was in jail, and he got a letter from a bunch of clergymen. Different denominations and a couple of different faiths, some Jewish clergymen as well, laying into them. Your timing's bad. Your methods are bad. And there are very few people, like I said, that can communicate like Martin Luther King Jr. did, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And there's a lot of fruit on this tree. So I'm going to go through a lot of this letter and share it with you. I mean, most people have never read it. And there's a lot there for us as Christians, and whether we're talking about the March for Life, and as I go through the letter from a Birmingham jail on the heels of the March for Life, over 100,000 people were there, and the media doesn't talk about it until the Catholic guys attack the Native Americans, which of course isn't what happened, and we all got sucked into that, and media manipulation. We have our own brand here, and Dr. Michael Brown was sharing on the stream in an article he wrote that, you know, just like North Korea has a brand of media manipulation, we have one too. So this is towards the end of his article, then we'll move on. We react instantly to a video, to a headline, to an accusation with almost no critical filter, which is so true. And whether we follow right-wing news or left-wing news, we tend to follow our side slavishly. The other side is evil. Our side alone is telling the truth. As for these Catholic students, what happens now that their personal information has been released to the public and their faces and names vilified? Add to this the fact that internet giants like Google influence what sites and videos we see, and it's clear we are being manipulated. Over at the New York Post, and coming from a different angle, Kyle Smith penned an op-ed titled "How the Media Convinces Us We're All Outraged, Even When No One Cares." And there's a great opportunity for us in this perception that the whole country is split in two and we hate each other. Okay. In short, Smith alleges that lazy journalists can manufacture a widespread outrage by selective reporting, and of course, we believe it. As Smith writes, "I'm outraged. You're outraged. They're all outraged. We're all outraged. Except, what if we aren't?" The reality is that, just like the people in North Korea, we are being manipulated by the media, including social media. In the case of North Korea, by the paucity of media. In our case, by the abundance. Okay? So in North Korea, the people don't get the truth. In America, we get 427,000 versions of the truth. And for us, in this world of alleged outrage, and I got Glenn Beck's book. I haven't read it yet, Addicted to Outrage, but I love that title. And that's true. I mean, you know how it goes. You spend a lot of time watching, listen on social media, on Twitter, listening to the mainstream news, just CNN, Fox News, whatever. And you're going to spend a lot of time getting ticked off. Right? I mean, that's exactly why I don't talk about politics every day. Because I got sick and tired of being ticked off all the time. And anybody on the other side of the issue was not somebody made in the image of God, worthy of dignity and respect, and somebody that needs to hear and accept and follow the gospel. They're just an enemy, an idiot, a freak, a this, a that, a sexual deviant, you name it, whatever. That's what they were. They were just the enemy. And that's just, we deal with reality and truth, absolutely, but with grace all the time. You've heard me say this once, you've heard me say it 1,000 times. That's the old Tim Keller sermon that I reference a lot, and I still give him credit for. If you're all truth and no grace, you're a bully. If you're all grace and no truth, you're a coward. Jesus, John chapter 1, verse 14, full of both grace and truth. So the opportunity for all of us, if you're a Christ follower and care to have an opportunity to share the gospel, which you should, then in the middle of this outrage and craziness should stand you and me with this broken heart and an unusual and winsome calmness and occasionally a smile on your face. And you don't get sucked into the machine. And you can ask good penetrating questions. And here's what happens on my Facebook pages. I get hit from both sides, the right and the left. But that's Facebook and that's keyboard courage and all that kind of stuff. Out in the real world, how often does that happen to you? I mean, I don't work in a big corporate environment or something, but are there people getting into fistfights over Donald Trump or immigration policy or build the wall? Are people spitting in each other's coffee when they're not looking? Is it really crazy nasty out there? Sure, there's some of that. But man, I think a lot of it's ginned up, and the liberal media, but the right media as well, they make money on our depravity and our hatred because they keep coming back for more. Because do you know what it breeds? Self-righteousness. You're right, they're wrong. I'm right, you're wrong. And then I'm self-righteous because I'm taking the position that you can bathe it in the gospel, and I can make a biblical case for just about every position I have. But oftentimes I'm looking down my nose at everybody else, and that's self-righteousness. Then you start to think you're a pretty good person, except you're not. You might be pretty good next to whoever, take your pick. Adolf Hitler's the most convenient. But next to an all-powerful, all-holy, perfect, loving, just God, we're all pond scum. Okay, enough of that. All right, I'm going to turn the corner. I'm going to break all kinds of radio rules, and I'm going to read to you a lot. But this is something that we should visit. There's all kinds of stuff here, especially on the heels of being at the March for Life. Would Martin Luther King Jr. Be at March for Life? You bet your bottom dollar he would be. Because 35-36% of all abortions are African Americans. Margaret Sanger rolling over in her grave as she faces her judgment forever and ever and ever in a place called hell. But her little plan worked, is working, continues to work. To get rid of the Negro population through eugenics, and we'll get them to buy into it. And like the white population, everybody else. And then it's just a choice. It's just convenience. Not good timing. It's just a blob of cells. It's not a human being. Had Martin Luther King Jr. not been taken at an early age, I fully expect that he would have shown up at the March for Life. So here's from his letter. So he's writing a letter from the Birmingham jail to fellow clergymen who were hammering him for his means and his timing and all that kind of stuff. So I'm just going to keep reading through different excerpts, and I'll comment on it here and there, okay? But there's so much here that I know God will use in your mind and your heart and your spirit, wherever you're at right now, There's a lot of fruit on this tree, which is why I'm going to read a lot of it. While confined here in the Birmingham City Jail, I came across your recent statement calling my present activities unwise and untimely. But more basically, I'm in Birmingham because injustice is here. I'm skipping around. Just as the prophets of the 8th century BC left their villages and carried their thus saith the Lord far beyond the boundaries of their hometowns, and just as the Apostle Paul left his village in Tarsus and carried the gospel of Jesus Christ to the far corners of the Greco-Roman world, so am I compelled to carry the gospel of freedom beyond my own hometown. Like Paul, I must constantly respond to the Macedonian call for aid. I would add, what's the loudest call for aid on the planet? That would be the 41 million children murdered last year in the womb. Moreover, back to the letter, I am cognizant of the interrelatedness of all communities and states. I cannot sit idly by in Atlanta and not be concerned about what happens in Birmingham. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality tied in a single garment of destiny. Wow, what a great word for America today. Love your neighbor, the United States of America, independent yet together. That's largely gone. But that's like, they're like, what are you doing in Birmingham? You're not from here. You're from Atlanta. It's like, hey, but you know, I've never had an abortion, never paid for an abortion. My wife hasn't gone down that road. Thank God. Others have, but that's not me. So why should I care? You don't have that option if you're a follower of Christ. Who's my neighbor? Everybody. We'll get back to this letter from a Birmingham jail today on MLK Day. This is Steve Noble and the Steve Noble Show. There's a lot of fruit on this tree, which is why I'm going to spend the rest of the show reading through it. I love you guys, and I love the Lord. That's why we're doing it. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, spending the rest of the time today working our way through Letter from a Birmingham Jail by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. That was in response, today's MLK Day, if you hadn't noticed, wondering where your mail was, that he was in jail there and they were doing their peaceful demonstrations and nonviolent action, but often turned violent because of the people on the other side of the issue. And so he was in jail and he got a letter from a bunch of fellow clergymen kind of hammering him. And so he got a lot of that kind of attention and did, and rarely responded. But in this case, he did. And it's an incredibly long letter. I'm not reading all of it. Don't have time to. But there's a lot of fruit here. And especially for me on the heels of being at the March for Life up in D.C. last Friday with over 100,000 people. And like I said, the rally part, I mean, I wasn't too into that. But the march itself was really invigorating, encouraging, heavy emotionally, spiritually, mentally to think about the million children that are being butchered every year in America. Over 60 million now in America since Roe versus Wade, 41 million a year worldwide. So as I read through a letter from a Birmingham jail earlier today and all that he did and should have done, and I'm glad he did, and we should all be, for the cause of racial justice and fighting against racial iniquity, we should have that same approach and that same dedication to the cause of life. And so that's it's kind of, and we still have racial issues in this country. There's no question about it. And I know I'm handicapped because I'm white and because I've never had that personal experience. But that doesn't mean I shouldn't be involved in having those conversations, and we often do that on the show, and we all need to do that. So I'm just taking you through a bunch of this. It's just an incredible letter and so much fruit here for us as followers of Christ in an imperfect world where sometimes we have to take a stand and sometimes direct action that might end up getting you thrown in jail. And I think those days are nearer now than they have been before. And whereas for Dr. King and a lot of the people that fought the civil rights fight, it was specifically based on the racial issues and the problems, the nightmare here in America for us, it'll be standing up for biblical truth in general. So there's a lot of advice here, I think, for us as we move through this. In any nonviolent campaign, there are four basic steps: collection of the facts to determine whether injustices exist, negotiation, self-purification, and direct action. We've gone through all those steps in Birmingham. There can be no gainsaying the fact that racial injustice engulfs this community. Birmingham is probably the most thoroughly segregated city in the United States. Its ugly record of brutality is widely known. Negroes have experienced grossly unjust treatment in the courts. There have been more unsolved bombings of Negro homes and churches in Birmingham than in any other city in the nation. These are the hard, brutal facts of the case. On the basis of these conditions, Negro leaders sought to negotiate with the city fathers, but the latter consistently refused to engage in good faith negotiation. Then, last September, he's explaining their action there, came the opportunity to talk with leaders of Birmingham's economic community. In the course of the negotiations, certain promises were made by the merchants. On the basis of these promises, the Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth and the leaders of the Alabama Christian Movement for Human Rights agreed to a moratorium on all demonstrations. But then it didn't come through. All the signs, you know, blacks here, whites there, all that kind of stuff. Some of them were taken down. Most of them were not. The ones that were taken down went back up. And so they kind of reneged on that. Mindful of difficulties involved, writes Dr. King, we decided to undertake a process of self-purification. I love this. We began a series of workshops on nonviolence, and we repeatedly asked ourselves, and you and I, friend, need to deal with this question as well, as the days get darker in this country. I don't think this is 5 years away, but it's less than 50, I think. Are you able to accept blows without retaliating? Are you able to endure the ordeal of jail? How about that? Are you? Am I? For the gospel? For truth? For life, unborn and otherwise? Are you willing? Am I? It's a good question. I have hope that Mr. Bow Wow, who is the new mayor, will be reasonable enough to see the futility of massive resistance to desegregation. But he will not see this without pressure from devotees of civil rights. My friends, I must say to you that we have not made a single gain in civil rights without determined legal and nonviolent pressure. This is a case for activism, okay? Lamentably, it is an historical fact that privileged groups seldom give up their privileges voluntarily. Individuals may see the moral light and voluntarily give up their unjust posture. But as Reinhold Niebuhr has reminded us, groups tend to be more immoral than individuals. Same thing's true as we see social media and what we're made to believe is true about America versus individuals themselves. Back to the letter. We know through painful experience that freedom is never voluntarily given by the oppressor. It must be demanded by the oppressed. Which brings me back to the March for Life and the life issue. Can it be demanded by the oppressed masses of children murdered in the womb? 36% of whom are black, murdered almost exclusively by white doctors? Who's going to make those demands for that oppressed group? Can only be us, you and me. For years now, Dr. King writes, I've heard the word wait. It rings in the ear of every Negro with piercing familiarity. This wait has almost always meant never. We must come to see with one of our distinguished jurists that justice too long delayed is justice denied. Okay? He's such an amazing writer. We go on. We have waited for more than 340 years for our constitutional and God-given rights. The nation of Asia and Africa are moving with jet-like speed toward gaining political independence, but we still creep at horse and buggy pace toward a gaining of a cup of coffee at a lunch counter. Perhaps it is easy for those who have never felt the stinging darts of segregation to say, wait. But when you have seen vicious mobs lynch your mothers and fathers at will and drown your sisters and brothers at whim, when you have seen hate-filled policemen curse, kick, and even kill your black brothers and sisters, when you have seen when you see the vast majority of your 20 million Negro brothers smothering in an airtight cage of poverty in the midst of an affluent society, when you suddenly find your tongue twisted and your speech stammering as you seek to explain to your six-year-old daughter why she can't go to the public amusement park that has just been advertised on television and see tears welling up in her eyes when she is told that Funtown is closed to colored kids, and see ominous clouds of inferiority beginning to form in her little mental sky, and see her beginning to distort her personality by developing an unconscious bitterness toward white people, when you have to concoct an answer for your five-year-old son who is asking, Daddy, why do white people treat colored people so mean? When you take a cross-country drive and find it necessary to sleep night after night in the uncomfortable corners of your automobile because no motel will accept you. When you're humiliated day in and day out by the nagging signs reading white and colored. When your first name becomes nigger. Your middle name becomes boy, however old you are. And your last name becomes John. And your wife and mother are never given the respected title Mrs. When you are harried by day and haunted by night by the fact that you are a Negro, living constantly a tiptoe stance, never quite knowing what to expect next, and are plagued with inner fears and outer resentments. When you are forever fighting a degenerating sense of nobodiness. Then you will understand why we find it difficult to wait. See, and that's why you need to listen. We need to listen. And you go, well, that was then, Steve. Things are a lot better in America. I would agree with that statement. But things are still pretty bad. We still have a lot of problems on the race issue. And I'm not talking about the life issue right now, which is also a race issue. I'm just talking purely about a race issue. So I don't have this in my history on this side of it. I don't have anybody in my family history in America that dealt with what Dr. King was just talking about. I don't. And so when an African-American brings this up to me and talks about the dark history of our country, I don't just slough it off and say, well, things are a lot better now. Now, what is the difference between how does one determine whether a law is just or unjust? Because he quoted, I would agree with St. Augustine that an unjust law is no law at all. Because they were like, how can you decide you're going to follow one law and not follow another one? Because he said there's two types, just and unjust. You follow just laws, you don't follow unjust laws. Which is what's going to happen to you and me, by the way, as Christians. Unjust laws. Christian education, you see it right now with Lady Gaga and everybody going after Mike Pence's wife for working at a Christian school that believes in, well, Christian doctrine. And all of a sudden, you're the bad guy, right? How does one determine whether a law is just or unjust? A just law is a man-made code that squares with the moral law or the law of God. Do you think abortion does? Of course not. An unjust law is a code that is out of harmony with the moral law. To put it in the terms of St. Thomas Aquinas, an unjust law is a human law that is not rooted in eternal law and natural law, which is definitely abortion being legal and demand. And they're about to make it legal and demand all the way up through birth in New York City. They're voting on that tomorrow. New York State. Sick. And sometimes I delight in the fact that God's wrath will not sleep forever. And I probably shouldn't. Any law that uplifts human personality is just. Any law that degrades human personality is unjust. All segregation statutes are unjust because segregation distorts the soul and damages the personality. It gives the segregator a false sense of superiority and the segregated a false sense of inferiority. Segregation, to use the terminology of the Jewish philosopher Martin Buber, substitutes an I-it relationship for an I-thou relationship and ends up relegating persons to the status of things. Or choices, I might add. Or just a blob of cells. Back to the letter. Hence, segregation is not only politically, economically, and sociologically unsound, it is morally wrong and sinful. Paul Tillich has said that sin is separation. Is not segregation an existential expression of man's tragic separation, his awful estrangement, his terrible sinfulness? Thus it is that I can urge men to obey the 1954 decision of the Supreme Court, for it is morally right. And I can urge them to disobey segregation of ordinances, for they are morally wrong. And that's why you have to know what you believe. You have to be able to back up your positions biblically if you're a follower of Christ. And then when the laws change, as they will, you have to stand on the higher law, the biblical law. But the bigger question is, are you willing to do that and pay the price? Dr. King was willing to pay the price. The question for us is, are we? We'll continue with that when we come back. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, spending a good chunk of the show today working our way through, not all of it, but a good chunk of it, a letter from a Birmingham jail by Martin Luther King Jr., Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Of course, just an incredible letter. If you've never read it, I think I put a link up to it. I'll put a link up to it. If you can do that for me, Evan, please just throw a link up there in the Facebook live feed if you want to join us here in the studio. We're live always on the radio Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 p.m. Some of you hear a tape-delayed show, but if you want to jump in on the live part of it, we're always in here, pretty much, God willing, Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern. So put that up. Just find a link to that, the entire context of letters from a Birmingham jail. And there's just so much fruit on the tree here for us, and that's why I'm reading through a good chunk of it. Back to his letter. And he's just kind of explaining to these clergymen that had a problem with their direct action they were taking in Birmingham. Nonviolent, it got violent, but it wasn't because of the protesters. It wasn't because of Dr. King and everybody else. And he has a word in here for like the apathetic white church at the time, which we have to remember that as well when we're dealing with racial issues in America. There is a history there, obviously, and it matters, and it still matters. Let's see. In no sense do I advocate evading or defying the law, as would the rabid segregationists. That would lead to anarchy. One who breaks an unjust law must do so openly, lovingly, and with a willingness to accept the penalty, which I think is coming our way if you're going to keep following Christ in America with respect to the law, because I think he'll get more aggressive against us. This is me, not Dr. King. I submit that an individual who breaks that law, that conscience tells him is unjust and who willingly accepts the penalty of imprisonment in order to arouse the conscience of the community over its injustice, is in reality expressing the highest respect for law, moral law especially. Of course, there's nothing new about this kind of civil disobedience. It was evidenced sublimely in the refusal of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to obey the laws of Nebuchadnezzar on the ground that a higher moral law was at stake. It was practiced superbly by the early Christians, who were willing to face hungry lions and the excruciating pain of chopping blocks rather than submit to certain unjust laws of the Roman Empire. And that's the question for us. Are you willing to pay a price at all for following Christ, for sticking to his truth in the face of a culture that's increasingly coming against that? Like Mike Pence's wife, working at a Christian school where they abide by, wait for it, Christian principles. According to Lady Gaga, he's the worst kind of Christian. And she confesses to be a Christian, but hasn't studied it, and probably doesn't make a profession of faith. And obviously, it's not a lot of Christ-like quality to her career. Back to the letter. I must make two honest confessions to you, my Christians and Jewish brothers. First, I must confess that over the past few years, I have been gravely disappointed with the white moderate. Think lukewarm. I have almost reached the regrettable conclusion that the Negro's great stumbling block in this stride toward freedom is not the white citizen's counselor or the Ku Klux Klanner, but the white moderate, who is more devoted to order than to justice, who prefers a negative peace, which is the absence of tension, to a positive peace, which is the presence of justice, who constantly says, I agree with you in the goal you seek, but I cannot agree with your methods of direct action. You shouldn't be standing out in front of the abortion clinic. That's just too aggressive. That's me saying that. Who paternalistically believes he can set the timetable for another man's freedom, who lives by a mythical concept of time, and who constantly advises the Negro to wait for a more convenient season. Shallow understanding from people of goodwill is more frustrating than absolute misunderstanding from people of ill will. Lukewarm acceptance is much more bewildering than outright rejection. Wow. I had hoped that the white moderate would understand that law and order exist for the purpose of establishing justice, and that when they fail in this purpose, they become the dangerously structured dams that block the flow of social progress. What an amazing communicator. I had hoped that the white moderate would understand that the present tension in the South is a necessary phase of the transition from an obnoxious negative peace, in which the Negro passively accepted his unjust plight, to a substantive and positive peace, in which all men will respect the dignity and worth of human personality. And I look at that and go, human life, too. What are we willing to do to stand up against abortion? Show up once a year and have a march and a parade? That's important. But what the heck are we doing the other 364 days a year? Actually, we who engage in nonviolent direct action are not the creators of tension. We merely bring to the surface the hidden tension that is already alive. We bring it out in the open, where it can be seen and dealt with. This is why I agree with having abortion pictures out in the public, by the way. Like a boil that can never be cured so long as it is covered up, but must be open with all its ugliness to the natural medicines of air and light. Injustice must be exposed, think abortion as well, with all the tension its exposure creates to the light of human conscience and the air of national opinion before it can be cured. That's why you have to call it what it is and show it for what it is. Now is the time to lift our national policy from the quicksand of racial injustice to the solid rock of human dignity. What an incredible communicator. This is Letters to a Birmingham Jail from Martin Luther King Jr. You speak in our, about our activity in Birmingham as extreme. At first, I was rather disappointed that fellow clergymen would see my nonviolent efforts as those of an extremist. I began thinking about the fact that I stand in the middle of two opposing forces in the Negro community. One is a force of complacency made up in part of Negroes who, as a result of long years of oppression, are so drained of self-respect and a sense of somebodiness that they have adjusted to segregation. And in part of a few middle-class Negroes who, because of a degree of academic and economic security, and because in some ways they profit by segregation, have become insensitive to the problems of the masses. He's talking about people that are doing okay financially, so they've stopped paying attention. And then he talked about the opposite end, which of course was Elijah Muhammad's Muslim movement, Malcolm X, right? I have tried to stand between these two forces, saying that we need to emulate neither the do-nothingism of the complacent nor the hatred and despair of the black nationalist. For there is the more excellent way of love and nonviolent protest. That's us, Christ follower. I am grateful to God that, through the influence of the Negro church, the way of nonviolence became an integral part of our study, of our struggle. Oppressed people cannot remain oppressed forever, unless they're unborn. I added that. The yearning for freedom eventually manifests itself, and that is what happened to the American Negro. Something within him reminded him of his birthright of freedom, and something without has reminded him that it can be gained. He liked to hearken back to the Declaration of Independence a lot, by the way, as he should. But though I was initially disappointed at being categorized as an extremist, as I continued to think about the matter, I gradually gained a measure of satisfaction from the label. Was not Jesus an extremist for love? Love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. Was not Amos an extremist for justice? Let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. Was the Apostle Paul not an extremist for the Christian gospel? I bear in my body the marks of the Lord Jesus. Was not Martin Luther an extremist? Here I stand, I cannot do otherwise, so help me God. And John Bunyan, who said, I will stay in jail to the end of my days before I make a butchery of my conscience. Abraham Lincoln said, this nation cannot survive half slave and half free. And Thomas Jefferson, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. So the question is not whether we will be extremists, but what kind of extremists will we be? Will we be extremists for hate or for love? Will be extremists for the preservation of injustice or for the extension of justice? In what dramatic scene on Calvary's Hill, three men were crucified? We must never forget that all three were crucified for the same crime, the crime of extremism. Two were extremists for immorality and thus fell below their environment. The other, Jesus Christ, was an extremist for love, truth, and goodness, and thereby rose above his environment. Perhaps the South, the nation, and the world are in dire need of creative extremists. Wow. On the life issue, man, I'm like, preach it. Let me jump towards the end because he really, it's so good. You should read the whole letter. Letters of Birmingham from a Birmingham jail by Martin Luther King Jr., okay? I wish you had commended the Negro sit-iners and demonstrators of Birmingham for their sublime courage, their willingness to suffer, and their amazing discipline in the midst of great provocation. One day the South will recognize its real heroes. I'm praying this is the truth in America about life, okay? They will be the James Merediths with the noble sense of purpose that enable them to face jeering and hostile mobs and with the agonizing loneliness that characterizes the life of the pioneer. They will be old, oppressed, battered Negro women, symbolized in a 72-year-old woman in Montgomery, Alabama, who rose up with a sense of dignity and with her people, decided not to ride segregated buses, and who responded with ungrammatically profundity to one who inquired about her weariness. My feet is tired, but my soul is at rest. They will be the young high school and college students, the young ministers of the gospel, and a host of their elders, courageously and nonviolently sitting in lunch counters and willingly going to jail for conscience' sake. One day the South will know that when these disinherited children of God sat down at lunch counters, they were in reality standing up for what is best in the American dream and for the most sacred values in our Judeo-Christian heritage, thereby bringing our nation back to those great wells of democracy which were dug deep by the founding fathers in their formulation of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. Again, I'm thinking through this whole letter, of course in the original context, but also in the context of the abortion issue in life. Never before have I written so long a letter. I'm afraid it's much too long to take your precious time. I can assure you that it would have been much shorter if I had been writing from a comfortable desk. But what else can one do when he is alone in a narrow jail cell other than write long letters, think long thoughts, and pray long prayers? If I have said anything in this letter that overstates the truth and indicates an unreasonable impatience, I beg you to forgive me. I love his humility here. If I have said anything that understates the truth and indicates my having a patience that allows me to settle for anything less than brotherhood, I beg God to forgive me. I hope this letter finds you strong in the faith. I also hope that circumstances will soon make it possible for me to meet each of you, not as an integrationist or a civil rights leader, but as a fellow clergyman and a Christian brother. Let us all hope that the dark clouds of racial prejudice will soon pass away and the deep fog of misunderstanding will be lifted from our fear-drenched communities. And in some not-too-distant tomorrow, the radiant stars of love and brotherhood will shine over our great nation with all their scintillating beauty. Yours for the cause of peace and brotherhood, Martin Luther King Jr. Let me rephrase that last part. Let us all hope that the dark clouds of abortion will soon pass away and that the deep fog of misunderstanding and apathy will be lifted from our fear-drenched communities, our blood-drenched communities. And in some not-too-distant tomorrow, the radiant stars of love and brotherhood and childhood and childbearing and motherhood and fatherhood will shine over our great nation with all their scintillating beauty. Oh, Lord, that it would be so. Letters from a Birmingham jail written in the context of racial injustice, but beautifully applied to the same concept of racial injustice in the womb, the biggest social justice problem on the planet, abortion. God help us and God help America. This is Steve Noble and the Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always said, ever forward.